Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
sanctified super soldiers. Sanctified super soldiers. Yes. Buffalo soldiers. And that's going to be our topic of the day. So, today, I would suspect you're wondering, are we going to be talking about the Buffalo Soldiers? Well, we're going to address that in just a moment. But before I do that, let me welcome all of you who took the time out to tune in to tonight's program, Progressive News Weekly, and inform you formally that you have reached the right place at the correct time. And yes, you are listening to Daryl Clark's Progressive News Weekly, the radio program where week in and week out on Thursday evenings at about this time, 6:30 Eastern time, we bring you news and information that's called, gathered, from around the nation and even occasionally overseas or across the borders. It's news that's intended to inspire you, encourage you, enlighten you, empower you, and hopefully instill you to get involved, make a difference, and take some action. And so, with that said, it's news that I like to say you can use. It's news for you, by you, and of you. That should sound familiar and is apropos for tonight's program, because those words are taken from our Constitution. Although by many standards, this country isn't necessarily living up to that. Don't misunderstand me. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world, because here we can make a difference. It's a matter of being involved. And again, that's what we're about here with Progressive News Weekly. And so the news you get here is not typically heard on mainstream media. And if it is heard on mainstream media, it's given often with a spin or some political or business influence, or it's just simply not given the time it deserves. I mean, we'll be talking about life potentially on another planet on the evening news, and they'll give it a 10-minute segment, which, of course, the whole program should have been devoted to. So we don't do that here. Often we'll go into subsequent programs if we have to. In other words, we'll do a series week to week on one topic if we deem it's worth it. So with that said, if you know of news or information or a particular individual who has information that the masses should be hearing because it's not typically heard in the unadulterated fashion that it deserves, drop me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore, C-L-A, 1-8, at MSN.com, and we'll certainly look into it. Of course, anyone that comes on this program or any topic has been investigated, researched, and vetted, because we keep it real. It's not just live, but it's real. And we like to know and believe and understand that, well, reasonably, we're fact-based. Tonight's no exception. As I often say, put on your seatbelts, because we're going to be talking about a history that's not spoken of enough. And that is one of the things that you will hear on mainstream media, the topic we have for tonight, but it's just not spoken of enough. So what's happening in mainstream media? Speaking of mainstream, well, politically, our president has been keeping busy because he is a busybody. You have to give him credit for that. But I'm not here to bash the president. In fact, I'm here to lift him up. But we're going to have to hold him accountable in order to do that. And that's what I'm all about. So we know he's in the news in terms of his first or second executive decision with regard to the ban. And, of course, it's in the courts right now. I'm not giving that too much time. So it's got its 30 seconds from my perspective of what it deserves. You can get more information on that somewhat from mainstream and print media. Also across the internet, I suggest you use your internet and use numerous sources. Don't go with just the liberal angle. You need to really look at both sides of it, because remember, our political system, it's not a left wing or right wing. It's really the same bird. Let's get it straight here. It's just a matter of which wing we're under at the time. But in this case, we do have a potential extremist, and we have to keep our eye on him very closely. Although I do believe that there are some things, I don't do a broad brush sweep, and that some people, you know, dislike that in me. Take it for what it is. I don't do broad brush for any side of that bird, left or right wing. As you heard me talk about, you know, the previous administration, and there were a lot of flaws from my perspective, although there were a lot of good things. And I love the fact that our children could see an African-American president, our children being those who are African-American. And I think he was good for the country significantly, though there were some things that I was very disappointed with. This particular president, there are some things that I think that we should keep an eye on, and I'm potentially very, very disappointed in. But I also think that there are some things, because he's going to be there. I don't know if the impeachment is going to happen that so many talk about. But we also, I believe, need to look at this from a broad perspective and see what things that might be there. And I'll give you an example in case there are folks scratching their head, because I've had relatives that won't even speak to me anymore just because of this comments I just made. And I think they were light. I haven't said I endorse and I love him. But just to be able to say anything positive, you know, my perspective, drop the line now. I have no fear for speaking truth to power and speaking truth to that which is, by many standards, not power. So what is power? Power is the ability to influence one's own outcome. So if you can't do that, you're powerless. But we are powerful because we can influence our outcome. We just have to be more unified. And our problem is we're too divided. So when I think about people who got a problem with me speaking my perspective without having some dialogue, keep it moving. So with that said, one example. It's no secret, if you've been listening to me for the last 8 and a half, well, we're into our 9th-plus year. We're going on 10 years on the air. You know how I feel about natural health. As a certified nutritionist and naturalist, I don't believe in vaccines personally. And I will say that that's one area that this particular president has supported. Robert De Niro, and one of the Kennedy clan, I like to call them, were appointed to that particular project by him to oust mercury in all vaccines. That's a good thing. Who wants to deny it? Raise your hand. By the way, we are live. All you have to do is press 1 on your dial. Most of you dialed in with the 347-838-9142. If you press 1, I or my engineer will see that you're interested in participating in this dialogue, and we certainly will give you some airtime as long as you're reasonable. We do screen, you know, because this is a family program. We do screen the airwaves. So you're always welcome to participate in the dialogue. I'm not one to not listen. Even if the conversation is not necessarily in agreement with my perspective, because we need to be able to have a common dialogue to move forward. So, with that said, I will bring us back to today's topic. A shout out to all those like myself who cared about, enjoyed the late Al Jarreau as he passed on into a higher realm, I believe. He expired on and transpired on Sunday, which happened to be the night of the so-called Grammys. And I won't go on that one. That's another program coming up in the next couple of weeks. But I thought it was just, you know, my own perspective, I thought it was just nasty. We got to stop this, folks. We're so busy protesting on, you know, some things and we're forgetting other things. We got to be careful. They've taken basically R&B out of the music industry. You heard no jazz. I mean, let's get serious, folks. You know, as Spike Lee said in his movie, wake up. Now, that I've offended everybody I could think of. Anyway, let's get back to the radio program. I thank you sincerely for taking the time out. And if I have it my way, I'm going to make it worth your time. This evening, I am so thrilled, and I've been purposely not telling you who it is. For those of you who are not on my mail list, you need to get on it, because you'll get an email from me prior to the program, and you'll know who the artist or the guest is and a little bio on the individual, and then hopefully you'll share it. We don't need any more secret agents. I really enjoyed James Bond movies, and I still do. I love the secret agent movies. Mission Impossible, even though he's a Scientologist, and we all know who we're talking about. That's another story. But still and yet, I do enjoy secret agent movies, but we don't need to be secret agents. If you know of something and you hear something you enjoy, and if you're tuning in, that must mean you enjoy the program, I hope, or you're just one of those that just like, you know, to be in the mix and don't care what's going on. I don't think that's the case from my experience with our listeners. I'm proud to say I think we have some of the most intelligent listeners on the planet, and I'm proud to be a part of your world. So with that said, don't be a secret agent. If you haven't brought someone to the airwaves, you know, you got to be thinking, am I sharing or am I not caring? You can't have it both ways if you got something good and it's free. So please share Progressive News Weekly. You know, the figures are somewhere about 70% that radio, talk radio, is what they call right wing. And again, I don't get into that kind of language. But this is Progressive Radio, which is why I called it Progressive News Weekly. So tonight is part of our African American History Programming, which pretty much every month is African American History Programming on Progressive News Weekly. But still and yet, February is always special, and I always like to bring some treat during that month because I like to celebrate as much as the next person. And what more would I like to celebrate than the history of my people as an African American? Not that I don't love all, because I'm a human-loving person. I believe in the planet, and I believe in life, and I believe in love. And that transpires all. That threads all. Yet, I have to acknowledge who I am, what I am. And so tonight, we have a very, very special guest. I'm so, so pleased. We have someone who has been on the program in the past, I'm proud to say, and it's been a while. It's literally been a while, and I thought about that, and I said, you know, I haven't had Charles on the program. I went, and this goes back months and months, and I couldn't find his number. Well, I searched, and I found an old phone that I had that I no longer use because I don't have that service any longer. And I came up with Sergeant Harris's number. And boy, we had a good old dialogue some time ago. And he said he'd be willing to do Black History Month. Just to give you a little background, on Sergeant Harris. Sergeant Harris is a Civil War historian. He's an educator, and he's a sergeant of the 22nd United States Colored Troop Reenactment Unit. He's a true gregarian. I mean, he is not just a historian, but he cares about people, and he cares about African Americans and the heritage of African Americans. And this evening, Sergeant Harris will share historic facts of the roles African Americans played serving as U.S. colored troops during the Civil War. And I'm hoping we can also get into some more general African American history, as Sergeant Harris prides himself on also having a significant grasp on African American history in general. So this 20-year veteran of the 22nd United States Colored Troop Reenactment Unit this evening takes pride in traveling around the country, preserving and reenacting the heritage of those who fought for the freedom of blacks and even all Americans at large. He's well respected, and he's spoken in conferences, schools, churches, colleges, civic groups, just to help ensure that the sacrifice and story of these brave men and women will not be forgotten. And he's going to share with us the real truth. Those of you who think you know about African-American history, and especially in terms of the Civil War, I believe you'll find something that you probably did not know about. And if you have children or influence children in any way, whether it's just being a mentor or an uncle or aunt, you especially want to, if you can, get them in a room. And if you can't, make sure you listen to this program in the archives, which is available immediately after the program. So now that I've run my mouth, let me just tell you, I do have the capability of extending the program. And because I have run on for a while, I will extend the program, because we're going to make sure we give Sergeant Harris all the time that he needs to share with us what he has to share. And he will be coming back regularly now that he and I have reconnected. So, without further ado, I bring to you the airwaves of Sergeant Charles Harris of the 22nd USCT, United States Colored Troop. Sergeant Harris, are you there?
Yes. Yes, I'm here, Darryl. And thank you very much for that nice intro. Want to make a couple quick points there in terms of keeping it real. As a Civil War historian, I don't really possess the actual credentials. I don't have a master's or a doctorate in history. However, I am a student of history, and in my 20 years of being a Civil War reenactor, I have read extensively. I've visited a number of sites where some of these battles have taken place, and talked to talk to some of the descendants of men that fought in the Civil War, and but I just wanted to make that point clear, because I don't want anyone to feel that they're being misled. I have done my homework when it comes to the role and the involvement of African Americans in the Civil War.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm sure the listeners do as well, because that just sets the stage for the kind of individual that you are. But let's, as we said, you and I, let's keep it real. Yeah, okay. You are a historian. Change yourself. Because you know what? What you just described in terms of your background is worth more than many of those who have a paper on their wall. You know, it's like the carpenter who doesn't necessarily have that license, but could build a set of stairs for you better than any licensed carpenter that you could ever dream of. So, yeah, you're a historian, and we've had many on our program who may not be sociologists or psychologists who have the life experience to bring to us knowledge that'll take us beyond many who do have those many pieces of paper. So, yeah, we appreciate you having done the footwork.
Right.
That,
well, thank
that
you, Darryl.
Makes sense for us to be able to utilize and carry with us so that
right.
we can advance and evolve. So we appreciate
right. well,
that.
Well, thank you. I'm just one of many. I hail from New Jersey. I grew up in a place called Cape May, New Jersey, which is at the southern end of the state. Over the years, I've been involved with a lot of men from D.C. and Philadelphia, Baltimore, Boston, and New York, and we all have the same mission, Darryl. Our mission as African American Civil War reenactors is to tell the story about the role and the involvement of African Americans during the Civil War, and to make sure that their contribution that helped this country become what it is will never be forgotten. I have a personal connection too, because my great grandfather, a man by the name of William Green, he was a member of what was called the 25th USCT. I represent the 22nd because the 22nd had more men from the state of New Jersey than any other African-American regiment. But as I said a moment ago, I'm one of many men that are out there telling this story. And it's important because the truth of it is, if we as African Americans don't tell this story, it doesn't get told. Because what I've found in traveling and doing living history presentations in schools and colleges, the curriculum that is used in U.S. history really does not tell the full story of what we did and what we sacrificed to help this country become what it is.
Very good point. You know, I opened
right.
up with a bumper tune, Buffalo Soldiers.
Okay.
And I'll take that as an example about being misinformed or uninformed.
Okay.
You know, I set up with that tune intentionally because, first of all, I like the tune. And I
right.
had the ability.
Well, right. I can elaborate on that if you would like me to.
Yeah, please.
Try
elaborate
to,
on that.
Okay. Well, the whole issue of Buffalo Soldiers, unless you know the history, most people get what's known as the Buffalo Soldiers. They get them confused with the Civil War. The Buffalo Soldiers actually came after the Civil War. Now, during the Civil War, there were a lot of black men that were involved in cavalry units that fought on the side of the North. When the war was over, and there was one famous cavalry regiment from Mississippi, they were very skilled in what they did during the Civil War, and they were really good. When the war was over, because there were not a lot of jobs, period, especially for black folk that were freed. These men stayed in the Union Army, and because of the expansion of this country, the army was sending a lot of their troops west, and they needed cavalry units. So these men stayed in, and there were two cavalry units, all black cavalry units, that were formed, the 9th and 10th Cavalry, and they became what was known as the Buffalo Soldiers. Now, unless people don't know the actual history, the name Buffalo Soldiers was given to these black soldiers by Native Americans. When they saw them and when they saw how they rode and how they fought, they likened them to buffaloes. The dark woolly hair that is on a buffalo and the fierce courage of a buffalo. And so the Native Americans gave the name buffalo soldiers. But these men came after the Civil War. And what I like to do is step back a little bit and talk about just the Civil War, because I think we got to understand something about the Civil War. The Civil War was the most significant historical event that ever occurred in this country. And the effects of that event that took place 155 years ago are still being felt and dealt with to this very day. So if I could, Darrell, I'm going to jump right into it. And I'm going to just talk about the things that led up to the Civil War right now. Now, in 1861, well, let me go back. I mean, 1619 is when the first slaves came to this country. So you're talking for more than 300 years, you know, more than 300 years, slavery existed in this country, and it was brutal, and it was ungodly, and the way that it was justified was just, you know, fiction. But fast forward to 1860. In 1860, or just in 1861, prior to the war starting, you had over 4 million men, women, and children of African descent trapped in brutal chattel slavery. Now, when you throw in the so-called free blacks that lived in the North, and the term free blacks was really a misnomer, because as long as slavery existed anywhere in America, black folks were not really free. But anyway, you had more than 4 million. We comprised one-fifth of the total population of America in 1861. So you had a massive amount of people that were trapped in a ungodly, brutal system here, inhumane system. And this is something that could not go on forever. There was an abolitionist movement that had started way back, you know, 20, 30 years before the Civil War started. And this movement really began to pick up steam. And with the expansion of America heading west, there was a lot of questions as to the new states that were going to be added. Would these states be free states or would they be slave states? And so there was a lot of tension, absolute tension. And even though slavery had existed throughout the entire country, most of the northern states had outlawed slavery by 1861. And there were only 13 southern states that still held on to it. And these southern states, as part of their economy, as part of their heritage, and part of their attitude, they were determined to hold on to slavery. Now, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of misconception about the cause for the Civil War. A lot of folks in the South, a lot of southern whites, tried to imply that slavery was not the cause for it, that it was economic or states' rights, but that's not true at all. The overriding reason for the Civil War was slavery. And I want to just read a quote, and most people can go online and find this quote if they would Google it. In March 21st, 1861, in Savannah, Georgia, Alexander Stevens, who was the vice president of the Confederacy, he gave a speech. It's called the Cornerstone Speech, and I'm just going to read a paragraph out of it because this kind of sums up what the Confederacy was founded on. And so there was, you know, there's not going to be no misconception. He said, and I'm quoting him. He said, "Our government is founded upon the opposite idea." This is to the idea of equality in the Declaration of Independence. He was saying that the Confederacy was completely different than what's in the Declaration of Independence. "Its foundations are laid, its cornerstone rests upon the truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is first in the history of the world based upon this great physical and moral truth." Now, when you examine that paragraph, you can see without a doubt that the Confederacy was based on white supremacy. They didn't even consider people of African descent even to be human beings. So this, the notion that the Confederacy was based on some kind of noble nonsense, and that's what I call it, goes right out the window. By Alexander Stephens' own words, you can see that the Confederacy was based on something dark and something evil. And when you see those Confederate flags waving all over the place, that's exactly what those folks are saying. That flag is the flag of white supremacy. When it's used outside of the context of a Civil War reenactment or some other something connected to the Civil War, that's exactly what that flag stands for. And so let there be no doubt that the Civil War started because of slavery and because of those Southern states, their determination to maintain this evil institution, period, you know. And Alexander Stephens, what he wrote is echoed by many, many other Southerners, Andrew Jackson, Robert E. Lee, all had similar things to say, that they were fighting to maintain slavery. So the South, the Confederates, they fought valiantly, they fought courageously, but they fought for the wrong thing. They fought to maintain an evil institution. So what I want to try to do here after we clear that up, so that, you know, there'll be no mistake about what the Civil War was fought over. Let's move on. Okay, so you had these two forces that collided, and it resulted in a war. Now, a month after that speech, the Confederates fired on Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor, and the war started. Now, Abraham Lincoln, at the start of the war, he was trying to persuade the South to rejoin the Union, and so he did not want any black troops fighting on the side of the North because he thought that would further antagonize the South and the Confederates, and he could never get them to rejoin. So for the first 2 years of the war, there were no black regiments in mass that fought with the North. Now, there were individual black soldiers that fought in white units. If their skin was light enough and they could pass for white, they were joined into some of the regiments. But as time went on, and the first 2 years of the war went pretty badly for the North. Even though the North had the manpower, they had the resources, they had everything going for them, except they didn't have the competency of the leadership, the generals, and in some cases they didn't have the will that the Confederates had, because most of the battles, except for one major battle, took place in the South. And so when the Union armies invaded the South to put down the rebellion, the Confederates had something to fight for because the as they said, the Yankees were on their land. So they had a little bit more in the way of motivation to fight for. So as this war continued to drag on, and actually, the North, the Union generals were so incompetent, it was just ridiculous. Abraham Lincoln kept replacing his generals, hoping that he could find somebody that had enough competency that could lead us to a victory. But for 2 years, it didn't happen. And Robert E. Lee and Jackson and some of the other generals, They were making the North look foolish. And so, in the meantime, the morale of the Union troops began to plummet. And they were having trouble filling the ranks because as the war drug on, the casualties mounted. And the North was losing more men, almost two to one. So, as time went on, Lincoln began to see that, you know, he's going to need something if the tide was ever going to change and the North was ever going to get this war done and win this war. Because on paper, they should win. However, it wasn't turning out that way. So after 2 years of losing battle after battle, people like Frederick Douglass, who was a runaway slave, he was a leader of the abolitionist movement. He was begging Lincoln to allow black men to get into the fight. And so finally, Lincoln realized that, you know, he needed some help because it was tough to try to convince whites to go and die to end slavery. But if you talk to the average black person, free or slave, they were willing to join that fight in a hurry. So what Lincoln needed to do, he needed to have a victory first before he could, you know, come up with this plan. So in September of 1862, the North got their first major victory at Antietam in Maryland. And so that was the spark that Lincoln needed. And then after that victory, Lincoln issued what we all know as the Emancipation Proclamation, which was to take effect January 1st, 1863. And of course, what that said, it did not end slavery, but it ended slavery only in the states that were in rebellion. Now there were four or five states that were neutral during the war: Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, Kentucky, and it did not end slavery in those states. Only in the states that were in rebellion against the North that had declared war against the Union. So when 1863, January 1st came about. Oh, and there's a little side story that I want to talk about. There's a tradition in black churches that on a New Year's Eve, they have these things called watch services. Well, the where that originated was in 1862, on December 31st, 1862, just prior to the Emancipation Proclamation going into effect. All across the South and across the North, people gathered in churches, in fields, waiting, watching for that clock to strike 12:01 and for the Emancipation Proclamation to take effect And that was the beginning, not the end of slavery, but that was the beginning of the end. And so that what's celebrated in a lot of black churches, you know, for 150 some years, they call it a watch service. But that watch service started during the Civil War, the night before the Emancipation Proclamation was to take effect. Okay, so the Emancipation Proclamation came into being in January 1st, 1863. And then after that, the Bureau of United States Colored Troops was formed, and their mission was to recruit, to equip, and to deploy federal regiments of African-American soldiers. Now, just prior to that, there were some northern states in New England that were raising their own state regiments, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. They were in the process of raising their own state regiments, and the federal government raised the bulk of them. Of course, well, one of the most famous ones is the Massachusetts 54th. That regiment was depicted in the movie Glory some 20-some years ago when that movie came out. And but later on, the Massachusetts 54th was folded in to the state, I mean, to the federal regiments of USCT soldiers, United States Colored Troops. Okay, so with the creation of the Bureau of United States Colored Troops, these black regiments were being raised all across the country. My great-great-grandfather, he went to what was known as Camp William Penn, just north of Philadelphia. And at Camp William Penn, they trained there. They trained 10 regiments of African-American soldiers there. They had over 11,000 men that was trained there. There was another big Union training camp for black soldiers in Kentucky. There was one in Massachusetts. And there were training camps across the South. Now, let me just back up a moment. Now, prior to 1863, there were also black regiments that were being raised prior to that. In South Carolina, you had the first South Carolina colored infantry. In Kansas, you had the first Kansas colored infantry. They actually saw action in September of 1862. And in New Orleans, you had the Native Colored Guard. They raised three regiments in New Orleans. Now, these regiments were raised originally to help the Confederates. But when the Confederates in New Orleans said they didn't want any black soldiers, well, these men said, well, you know what? We're going to fight with the Union. And later they were folded right into the USCTs, and they fought against the Confederates early on. So you even prior to the federal government raising these regiments, you had black regiments in different parts of the country that were already forming. So here you are in 1863, at the start of 1863, and moving forward, you had conservatively, you had 166 federal regiments of African American soldiers, with roughly about 1,000 men to a regiment, and then you had state regiments. The conservative figure that most historians will tell you is that there were around 200,000 African Americans that fought with the Union Army. They fought in cavalry units, artillery, and infantry units. In addition to that, you had another 50,000 that served with the Union Navy. And so when you threw this kind of effort into the war, it helped turn the tide of the war. Now, most historians will tell you that the Union probably would have won the war with out these men. But they will also tell you that because these men joined the fight, the war came to a close a lot sooner than if they had not been involved. So I want to focus a bit on the unit that I represent. Now, the 22nd was one of 10 units that trained at Camp William Penn outside of Philadelphia. My great-grandfather, because of the close proximity to Philadelphia, a lot of the men from the 22nd came from the state of New Jersey. And my great-great-grandfather was actually in the 25th. That was another unit that trained at Camp William Penn. And so because of that close proximity, most of the men that trained at Camp William Penn in those 10 black regiments were from the Philadelphia area, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, Jersey, Connecticut, and so on and so forth. Now, there's a story about this incident that happened at Camp William Penn. True story. The commanding officer at Camp William Penn, his name was Wagner, Colonel Wagner. Now, you had these slave catchers, even during the war, because of the Dred Scott Supreme Court decision that allowed slave catchers to go anywhere in America at the time and capture what was called a runaway slave. You had slave catchers that were operating all over, even during the war. This was just amazing. But anyway, along those lines, when the call went out to free blacks in the North, they answered the call en masse. Because one thing that was very clear, because of the Fugitive Slave Act and the fact that any slave catcher could come north and accuse any black person of being a runaway slave, the reality is that even though you might have had the term free attached to yourself if you were living in the North as an African, someone of African descent, you were not truly free. And so when the opportunity came for blacks who were living in the North to join the Union ranks and to really strike a blow for freedom and to really do something to end slavery, they heeded the call. And so when some of these men were at Camp William Penn, there was these slave catchers who were tracking some runaway slaves from Delaware that were supposedly in the camp. So when these slave catchers came into Camp William Penn, they were surrounded by one of the regiments that were training, and it caused a heck of a commotion. Now, the story goes that Colonel Wagner got on his horse, and he rode out into the crowd, and these men, these slave catchers, there might have been a dozen of them, they were surrounded by hundreds of black soldiers that were training. Colonel Wagner said to these guys, he said, "Gentlemen, I cannot ensure your safety. If you are not out of here in 15 minutes, your fate is in your hands." And he turned to his troops and he said, "If they're not out of here in 15 minutes, do with them what you want." And he rode back to his quarters. Well, the story goes that these guys ran out of that camp and they never, ever came back again looking for any runaway slaves, because they were going to be killed. There's no doubt that they would have been killed. And the word got out, "Don't you dare go to Camp William Penn, because you would probably be killed." And so these men were able to, even if you were a runaway slave, and there were and there were a lot of them who ran away and made their way to Camp William Penn, and there were other camps that black soldiers were being trained at, and it was a sanctuary. And so you know, this idea that these slave catchers were going to be able to go to these training camps and snatch these guys away, that evaporated very, very quickly. I'm going to try to move along because I want to leave some time for people to ask some questions. But anyway, so the 22nd was one of 10 regiments that trained there. And there's a unique story about the 22nd. Each regiment had a regimental battle flag that was given to them before they left the camp. Now, there was a famous artist. His name was David Bowser. He was a black artist. He was commissioned to make the battle flags for all of the 12 regiments. For all the 10 regiments that trained at Camp William Penn. And he made a battle flag, which is, I think, one of the most unique battle flags of any North or South for the 22nd USCT. Now, this battle flag, you can go online to the website 2dnjbrigade.org, and you can click on the 22nd USCT, and you can actually see the battle flag. We have a replica of that we had made. It cost us about $3,000 to have that flag made, but it is something to see. On it, it has a black soldier with his bayonet on a Confederate colonel. Above it, a Latin inscription at the top of the flag reads Sig Semper Tyrannis, which means in Latin, thus always the tyrant. Now, there's nothing all that significant about that phrase itself, except that that phrase was taken off of the state flag of Virginia. When during the Revolutionary War, when that flag was created, and if you see the state flag of Virginia, it has a picture of a woman, I think they call her Virtue, with her foot on the neck of what they call a tyrant, and those words are on there, Sig Semper Tyrannis. Well, what David Bowser was saying to the Virginians in particular and to the Confederates in general is that this, because you called the British tyrants for not allowing the colonies their independence, you call them tyrants, but because you have now embraced this evil institution of slavery, you now have become the tyrant. And they took that phrase and they put it on the flag of the 22nd USCT. And so where do you think they sent the 22nd to fight with that battle flag? You guessed it. They sent them right into the state of Virginia. They marched out of that camp, and they marched right down Broad Street. Actually, they marched down Broad Street in Philadelphia. They had to march at night because some of the first units that marched out of that camp during the day got into confrontations with some of the locals. They didn't like the idea of even this was Philadelphia, which was a northern state. They didn't like the idea of these black men going off to fight. Anyway, so they marched out at night, and they went down to what's known as Penn's Landing in Philadelphia, and they boarded ships, and they headed down south. Well, following the 22nd, they were involved in a couple major battles in the state of Virginia. June 15th, 1864, the 22nd was attached to the 23rd Army Corps that attacked Petersburg, Virginia. Now, Petersburg was one of the defensive lines that protected the Confederate capital of Richmond. And I was actually in Petersburg several times. I was there for a reenactment several years ago. It was quite a battle. The 22nd, they overran a Confederate trench line under a hail of bullets, and they attacked a well-armed Confederate fort. You know, they went splashing through a swamp, and they actually took that fort. And that was June of 1864. There was a bigger battle that was shaping up in September of 1864. And the 22nd, they, along with about six or seven other USCT troops, they moved on to what was known as New Market Heights, where they attacked the Confederate defenses on September 29th, 1864. And they were under the command of a Major Cook. And in that battle of New Market Heights, and this is the battle that broke the defensive line around Richmond, Virginia, the Confederate capital. In that battle, there were at least 12 Congressional Medal of Honor winners amongst USCT regiments. What happened in that battle? The Confederates had some well skilled snipers. Oh, and I should point out something that was very significant. There were 200,000 African American troops that fought on the side of the North, but they were commanded by over 7,000 white officers, because no black soldier could technically have a rank higher than sergeant major, even though there were black soldiers that had ranks all the way up to a major. There were a few doctors, but anyway, there were all these white officers who commanded the troops. And what the Confederate sharpshooters and snipers did in the Battle of New Market Heights, they targeted the white officers who were commanding these black troops and took out quite a few of them, thinking that if they could kill them, then the rest of the regiments would scatter. But what happened is the sergeant majors of these regiments took command of the companies, and they rallied the troops, and they won the day, and they won that battle. And there were more than a few of them that won Congressional Medal of Honors because of what they did on that day, September 29th, 1864. And by the way, I went to the 150th reenactment of the Battle of New Market Heights a few years ago, about three years ago, and it was something. It was really something. Anyway, moving on. When that battle was finished, and the Union won that with the help of all these black regiments, in December of 1864, the 22nd was assigned to what was known as the 25th Corps, and this was the only black army corps in the history of the whole United States. And so the winter came and things got bogged down, but in the spring of the year, the push was on to take Richmond, because by this time, most of the defenses around Richmond had evaporated, had been neutralized. In the spring of 1865, on April 4th, 1865, Richmond finally fell, the capital of the Confederacy. It fell, and on that morning, one of the first Union infantry troops to enter the city of Richmond was the 22nd USCT, and when they entered that city with that regimental battle flag, that black soldier holding a bayonet on a white corporal, and those words inscribed on the flag, Sig Semper Tyrannis, taken off of the state flag of Virginia, when the residents, when the white residents of Richmond saw these men marching into the city, they pretty much knew that it was over at that point. And at that point, it fell. And a week later, the war was essentially over. I've kind of went through this pretty fast, but I just mainly talked about the role that some of the African American regiments played, but let's not forget that they were only about 10 to 15% of the entire Union Army, and there were tens of thousands of white soldiers that died on the battlefield. Of course, one of the most famous battles was the Battle of Gettysburg that happened in the summer of 1863. I mean, that was a horrendous battle, and that battle did in a lot of ways turn the tide of the war. As I said a while ago, most historians will say that the Union would have eventually won the war even without the black troops, but because they entered the fight 200,000 strong, they brought the war to a close a lot sooner. And you got to keep something else in mind, too. If you ask the average white soldier what he was, the white Union soldier, what he was fighting for, he was fighting to preserve the Union. If you ask the average black soldier what he was fighting for, he would say to abolish slavery, because they knew that this was the opportunity for slavery to end. So when Richmond fell and about a week later the war was ended, Lee did surrender. Unfortunately, Lincoln was assassinated. And when they held the funeral in Washington, D.C., one of the regiments that was at the honor guard of Lincoln, if you ever saw a picture of Lincoln's casket being rode through the streets of Washington, you'll see some black soldiers on either side of the casket. And those were from the 22nd USCT. They were the honor guard at Lincoln's funeral. They also were part of the group that chased down John Wilkes Booth and caught him in a barn. And unfortunately, fortunately, they set the barn on fire. Now, the 25th Corps, of which the 22nd was a part of, shortly after that, they were sent to Texas to intimidate the French. Who were flaunting with the Confederates whether or not they were going to enter the war and help the Confederates. But the Mexicans down there were also thinking that they were going to help the Confederates. So they sent the 25th Corps down there to send a message. And shortly after that, they stayed there till October 1865. And then they were sent back to Philly, where they were all mustered out. Now, of course, some of them died on the battlefield. The more fortunate ones were able to come back. But that is a bit of a brief history. Now, one of the most significant things that happened because these black men fought so gallantly, because they fought so bravely, they earned a measure of dignity in the society at that time. That led to the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment that on paper gave full citizenship to people of African descent. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery forever in America. The 14th Amendment said that anyone that was born in America would automatically have citizenship and they would have equal protection under the law. The 15th Amendment, and I'll read this from the 15th, the 15th Amendment provides individuals with the right to vote regardless of race, color, or previous servitude. And those three amendments were known as the Reconstruction Amendments. And why they are so important, especially the 15th Amendment, because in our present day, there is a move afoot, there was a move afoot in our America today to restrict people of color from voting. This was won 155 years ago. Now, even though these amendments were passed right after the war, it took another 100 years for these to be fully realized. So we have gone in that period of time from the Civil War, fast forward 100 years to the modern civil rights era of the 1950s and 1960s. It took that long for those amendments to be fully implemented in America. And now, in our present day, especially the 15th Amendment is being threatened by the Republican Party. I'm going to tell you the truth. By the Republican Party, they're passing voter ID laws, and they're attempting to restrict the right of people of color to vote on the false pretense that there's some kind of voter fraud. But because of what these men did that long ago, we gained that right to vote. No one gave it to us. We fought for it, and we died for it. And that's why it's so important to this day to resist. My great-grandfather was only 17 when he jumped in a wagon, and he rode all day and probably all night to get to that training camp. And he went off to war to fight, not knowing that he would ever come back. But he knew the importance of ending slavery and once and for all gaining full citizenship in this country. And that's what we have to preserve to this day. And that's why we have to remember what these men and women did, and we can't let their sacrifice be in vain. We can't let it be threatened by this nonsense that's occurring all around us today. Well, I've kind of ran through it pretty quickly. I hope that I have given folks a little bit of a broad sense of what happened. Oh, I want to add something else. There is another story that I do want to tell that has something to do with the a Navy. There was a man by the name of Robert Smalls. He was a slave. And he worked on a Confederate gunboat called the SS Planter in Charleston Harbor. And him and some other slaves, they were on there. The Confederate Navy had them doing a lot of different things on that ship to keep the ship going. Well, Robert Smalls, with his other men there, they plotted that they were going to take that ship. And one night, they loaded their families on that ship, and they donned the uniforms of the Confederate captain, and they sailed that ship past the Confederate defensives, and they sailed it into the Union ranks, and they delivered that ship. And the Union Admiral at the time, I forget his name, was so impressed that he made Robert Smalls a Union captain. And for the rest of the war, and that was in 1863, the rest of the war, Robert Smalls was a Union captain. Now, as I said earlier, the only rank that a black person could attain in the Union Army was Sergeant Major. But Robert Smalls, he became a captain. And about 10, maybe 15 years ago, the United States Navy commissioned a ship, the SS Robert Smalls, in his honor. So there's a lot of history. And speaking of history, if you're ever in Washington, D.C., on the corner of Avenue U and Vermont Avenues, there is a monument there called the Spirit of Freedom that is dedicated to the African-American soldiers and sailors that fought on the side of the North during the Civil War. And in a semicircle right behind there, you have the names, the rank, and the states that these men came from. 209,000 names are written there. And right across the street, you have the African American Civil War Museum headed up by Dr. Frank Smith. He's done a wonderful job there. And if anyone is in D.C., that is a must stop for you to make. It's right near Howard University. If you Google it, you can come up with the address and get directions. But if you're ever in Washington, D.C., you got to see this monument. It's an incredible sculptured monument dedicated to the African-American soldiers and sailors. Well, Darryl, I've kind of ran through it pretty quickly, and I hope I've been able to keep people's attention there. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to you and see how you would like to proceed.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I've just about wrapped it up, and so I was going to throw it back to you, Darryl.
Okay. Well, all I can say right now initially is wow, because you have certainly given us a timeline of information in a relatively short period of time that we can embrace and carry with us in our spirits, in our souls, for a lifetime and pass it on to many lifetimes. I just want to say for all of those who are listening, as I said earlier, who influence youth in any way, you'll certainly, if they are not with you, especially our educators, you'll certainly want to go to the archives and replay this this hour segment. What a short time to get so much information into the minds and hearts, especially of African American youth. It's so very.
Yeah, I'd like to just throw something out there real quickly. A lot of the guys who have been doing this a lot longer than I have, the Massachusetts 54th Company B in Washington, D.C., the 3rd USCT in Philadelphia, the 6th USCT in Trenton, the 26th USCT in New York City, the 54th Company A in Boston. If the people were to Google these different USCTs, you can get in contact with people if you're living in that area, and they will send people out to do living history presentations in these schools. I'm thinking of my good friend Joe Becton out of the 3rd USCT in Philadelphia. I mean, he's been doing this a lot longer than I have been doing it. And if you think I have a lot of information, he has even more. A man by the name of Fred Minus out of the 6th USCT in Trenton, and Al Ward. So these are some of the things that they can do. I have relocated down to South Florida, by the way. I'm in the Fort Lauderdale area. I spend most of the winter down here. And if there's anybody listening, especially that's attached to the school system, they can get in touch with me through you or through the website 2dnjbrigade.org. And I would be more than happy to come into any school system and talk to a young folks, black and white, and talk about the role and the contribution that African Americans made. But this is something that is happening, especially all over the East Coast and the Northeast. You have a lot of different units that have the same story that I'm telling, and even more, that's available for people to take advantage of.
Wow. I just think, as I said, wow, it's so critical. I know that our announcement newsletter goes out to hundreds and hundreds across the country.
Right.
Hundreds right here in the state of New Jersey. many of which are educators, are teachers.
Right.
I mean, all those who are teachers to take advantage of this information.
Sure.
Those of you who will be listening to me on the archives, I'm asking that you reach out to me at Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore C-L-A-1-8, at MSN.com. I'll certainly put you in touch with Sergeant Charles Harris. And I know that many of you probably didn't have pens or paper to write down some of the other USCTs, the 6th, the 54th, and
yeah, but
the 3rd.
I can, if you pass that along to me, I can put them in touch with them.
And that's exactly what I will be doing when they reach out to me. And I know I'll be reaching out to you myself as having been taught men now. I'll be reaching out to you as I speak to some of the educators that I know right in my own district. This,
right.
listeners, is information that we have to share. We have to ensure that this story is told. It is critically important. And not just, as Sergeant Harris said, not just for African Americans, but for all Americans. When I think about non-African Americans, they need to know for themselves. Because
Absolutely.
Without this knowledge, they're living something that is false. They're living a lie. And many of them, to no fault of their own, they're a victim of society. They're simply a victim of circumstances that has been put in place. It took over 100 years for those crucial amendments to really be implemented. And
That's right.
they still are not implemented fully, as Sergeant
that's true.
Has mentioned. I mean, the 13th, 14th, and 15th. The 13th, some of you may say, wait a minute now. No. Because when you start talking about the 13th abolishing slavery, okay, maybe in its more core form, but I would dare say that there are forms of it that exist right now called extreme racism. And so in order to get some fever and some momentum and energy spirit behind us, we need to understand in a retrospect where we really are. Because I believe there are those that would say, oh my gosh, we're doing so well. But put it in respect to those who really made the ultimate sacrifice. And I think you'd come to the conclusion that, oh, we can be so much further ahead considering we're going into the 21st century and still dealing with some of these issues. As we approach the top of the hour, I want to say, Sergeant, I'd like for you to come back. I'm not going to be able to entertain questions, but I do have a couple that have come to me here that I'll address half of those who have the questions. How many black men actually died in the Civil War, approximately?
There's approximately about 40,000. It's somewhere between 35 and 40,000.
Wow.
And that was a percentage wise, the black regiment suffered a higher rate of casualties than their white counterparts. And they were only in the war the last two years.
Yeah, I would say for the 2 years, that's a very high number considering about how many fought white and black together. How many were involved in the skirmish? Period. In this, I'm told, and I'm sure you can confirm.
In the Civil War, there were millions.
One of the most bloodiest wars.
Yes. Let me just say something very quickly. The figure for casualties in the Civil War used to be around 629,000, but his historians have had to up that to about 750,000. That's more men that died in all the wars combined that this country ever fought. If you add up a Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, Spanish-American War, World War I, II, Korea, Vietnam, up to the present time, if you combine all the casualties in all those wars, it would not equal the casualty rate that occurred during the Civil War.
Wow. So going back to one of the very first statements that you made, and that's so apropos that you're saying this now, because you've taken this full circle. You stated, Sergeant Harris, that this point in history was one of the most, if not, I think you actually said the most important event in the history of this country. And given
yes.
that fact you just shared with us, I will say I concur 110%. Especially when we look at the impact that it had and the
yes.
impact that it still carries up
still
to this
has.
Day and will probably carry
day.
As long as the country is a country.
Yeah. Right.
And
that's
so,
why it's so important, Darryl, that the truth be told about why the war started. Because well, one of the main reasons we study history is so that we learn from the mistakes of the past. And the mistakes of the past in this country, the original sin of this country was slavery. And if we don't learn that bigotry and racism can result in the kind of carnage and the kind of upheaval that occurred 155 years ago, we could repeat that again.
Learn from your past or repeat it in the future. That's a common, well-known fact, unquestioned. So well put. Another question I have, and I'll take one other question for our listeners. You'll press 1 on your dial if you'd like to have a comment or a question for Sergeant Harris. The number is 347-838-9142. If you've already dialed that number, just press 1 on your dial, and then myself or our engineer will pick up the line. You'll have a chance to speak with Sergeant Harris. But I do have a question here. Can you say anything about the role of women in the war?
Yeah, there were a lot of women actually followed the troops around. They followed them, and they were doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes in the camp and cooking and cleaning. But there was a specific role that some black women played. They were assassins. Black women had access to the Confederate camps like nobody else. Not only were they assassins, but they gathered intel. They were spies. One of the things that helped the Union to win the war is that it had a network of spies, and black women were used as spies because they could go into the Confederate camps as laborers and maids and sometimes even as prostitutes. And they would overhear the Confederate generals talking. But one of the things that they did, and in some cases, was this. They would go into a camp, and when it was late at night, they would pull out this derringer from underneath their dress, put a pillow over the head of a Confederate officer, and assassinate him and slip out into the night. That happened.
Wow. That is something that most have no clue of, and
have no clue.
As at the top, this is a story that has to be told. It's critically important that it's told. We certainly wouldn't be where we are today. Now, I understand what you said about it probably was inevitable. The North would have won. It just would have taken so much longer.
Right.
And so many more people would have suffered even more had it taken that additional amount of time. And that probably is a big probably, but it's not a definite. We really won't know.
Right.
One thing we do know is that African Americans played a role to contribute to the victory that the North had, which ultimately brought us to where we are now. That we know for a fact. We can happenstance and say, yeah, probably 90% chance or 93.8% chance it would have happened. But we don't know for sure if it really would have happened without those brave men.
I just want to give a quick shout out to that previous question about women. Of course, two of the most famous women, Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth, played vital roles during the leading up to the Civil War and during the Civil War with recruitment and leading slaves off the plantation to join the Union ranks.
Wow. Yes, yeah, so many don't understand that. So many don't understand. Yeah, I will definitely be following up with you, as I'm sure I'll be getting emails and phone calls post this interview. For those of you who tuned in late, and I see we have some listeners that tuned in on the back end, you have been blessed to be listening to a civil rights historian, albeit not carrying a doctorate, but yet true life experience, well-read, well-respected around the country for his acumen of information to this subject matter. And I'm speaking of Sergeant Charles Harris of the 22nd United States Colored Troop Reenactment Unit. Has shared with us information that to some significant extent you've not heard anywhere else. This Civil War historian, 20-year veteran of the 22nd USCT, has truly enlightened me. And if you did tune in late, you'll want to go to the archives to catch the full breadth of information that he had to share with us this evening. Sergeant Harris, thank you, thank you, thank you. Let's talk in the next couple of days, and let's plan next collaboration. As I said, with Progressive Weekly, it's always African American History Month. And so we don't want to let too much time go by where we don't revisit some of these annuals and take some other avenue of perspective on our African-American history. Because I know, as you said, this was brief. And the next time around, let's go down into some specific areas of this, this skirmish that took place. And I'm looking forward to that. Is that a possibility?
Okay, well, that's a possibility. Just want to say one parting thing for all those people listening. We have to keep the history alive. These men, we will not in any way let their sacrifice be in vain. When I put on this uniform, when I tell this story, I honor a memory like so many other guys like myself, hundreds and thousands of other who honor the a memory of these brave men and women. The struggle continues.
The struggle continues. Well, with that said, I'd like to thank all the listeners who've tuned in and taken the time out, who became enlightened, empowered, encouraged, and hopefully instilled to take some action by sharing this information with loved ones and colleagues and family. And as we close, as I always do, we'll say and ask, tell someone about Progressive News Weekly, where we bring you news and information that's gathered from around the country and indeed in often cases around the world. Truly, it's news for you, by you, and of you. So we're going to close, as I mentioned, Al Jarreau, you know, took his journey this week. And one of my favorite songs that he made was Never Giving Up. And I think that's apropos. We've come a long way, and we've still got a long way to go. But the strength and resilience that Sergeant Harris has shared with us is in our DNA. And so we'll never give up until we get true equality and are able to experience all that God has for us. God bless you all, and we'll look forward to seeing you, talking with you, hearing from you next week. Thank you, Sergeant Harris. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.